Mark.
20 minutes to 10. We talk about financial health on Tuesdays. Then we talk about your physical health. And this is specifically about the prostate. Now, prostate cancer, of course, is, prostate cancer is diagnosed more than 25,000 men just every year. But then you've got what we might call, and there is this benign prostatic hyperplasia, which is just an enlarged prostate, which is diagnosed in a lot of people. Now, it causes discomfort. And it is treated in a number of different ways, but this is what they're calling minimally invasive prostate surgery. Now, we speak regularly to the people from the Sydney Adventist Hospital, one of the great professionals there, and this is Dr. Imogen Patterson. She's a urological surgeon at the SAN, talking about this minimally invasive, really simple way of dealing with what is essentially an enlarged prostate. Dr. Imogen, good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you tonight about minimally invasive prostate surgery.
You've heard me fumbling around, so can you just explain what it is?
Well, minimally invasive surgical therapies, as you said, there's a lot of information out there about prostate cancer, but minimally invasive surgical therapies is the term we use to talk about surgery for benign prostate disease. So the prostate's a funny little walnut-shaped organ that sits underneath the bladder. And it causes trouble, both in the form of cancer, which I won't necessarily cover tonight, but in terms of causing benign prostate enlargement. And because it sits under the bladder and around the urethra, an enlargement can cause obstruction of people's flow of urine or men's flow of urine. So we've developed new technologies to treat these benign prostate symptoms. So minimally invasive surgery for this benign disease doesn't involve cuts to the tissue or removal or destruction of prostate tissue. And the aim being that it's a shorter anaesthetic procedure. Sometimes it can be done as an outpatient. And we want to try and improve their symptoms and avoid the risk of adverse outcomes that can occur from having more invasive surgery for benign prostate disease or the side effects of medication.
Okay, so that's the benign prostatic hyperplasia. So that's just essentially the enlarged prostate. So the prostate's got bigger. Is that the simple way of putting it?
Yeah, so BPH is we call it BPH or benign prostatic hypertrophy or hyperplasia. It's a really common condition as men get older. Their prostates grow and it starts to affect the quality of life. So it's not something that we consider to be life-threatening, but it's important that men as they get older still enjoy their lives. And approximately 50% of men in their 50s have problems with their waterworks because of benign prostate hyperplasia.
Yeah. So the prostate's got bigger and created problems down there. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So, look, we hear, I guess in recent years, we've heard a bit more about it. There are different products and treatments that are being talked about. So in terms of what you're talking about, minimally invasive surgery, are you reducing the size of the prostate? What do you do?
No, so in the old way we used to do it is called cavitating surgery and it's still a very, very good way of treating it, but the aim is that we put a telescope down and we cut away a cavity within the prostate so that it's easier for the urine to flow from the bladder through the urethra. But now we've got a few different options that don't cut the prostate, and the aim is to provide symptom relief for patients. And some of these treatments don't have the same longevity as the original treatment, but the idea is that we can solve the problems, get people off their medication, and then maybe a few years down the track they have a more definitive procedure. So we've got different options. Some are there. The four newest ones that spring to mind is one's water vapor therapy, one's a prostate urethral lift, another one's a removable stent, and the fourth one is actually embolization or blockage of the prostate arteries. And I can go through them with a bit more detail if you want, one by one.
Yeah, I mean, you've studied for years to do this, but essentially you're creating more room in there so that the blockages aren't happening or the pushing isn't happening?
Correct. And we try and use different techniques to do that. So for the water vapor therapy, we use the thermal energy that's stored in a few drops of water to treat the excess prostate tissue. And despite the fact that no tissue is removed during the procedure, it then relies on the body's natural systems to then shrink the prostate tissue, the tissue that's been steamed, in for want of a better word. And so people then see symptom relief within 2 weeks and can return to their regular life within a few days.
Is it permanent?
It's pretty new technology. So we have data for about 5 years, and it's looking pretty promising in terms of longevity of treatment.
That sounds remarkable. The way you've described
it's fantastic to watch it being done or to do it. It's such a great option for men to have other than just surgery. And obviously, because it's a shorter anaesthetic, people who are slightly more frail or have worse medical or, you know, significant medical comorbidities can become, this is an option for them rather than having a general anaesthetic or other risks. This gives more men more options, and that's what it's about.
I mean, the stent makes sense, I think, and then you talk about something where you lift the prostate to create more room. Is that what you were saying?
Well, I'll just quickly touch on the stent, because the stent's a bit clever because it's only a temporary stent. And so it takes about 5 to 7 days. You need to have 2 trips to the hospital. So in the first one, we pop down a little stent in a folded position, and it slowly expands over the course of 5 to 7 days and exerts a gentle pressure at 3 very precise points to widen the opening. And so it's this gentle reshaping of the urethra that widens the opening so the urine flows better. And then at 5 to 7 days, we remove the device completely, and it provides pretty reasonable, long-lasting relief of these BPH symptoms. So that's pretty exciting. But then the UroLift, which is the prostate urethral lift, again, it's quite unlike all of our previous therapies, which all sort of removed prostate tissue. It doesn't rely on removing prostate tissue. It doesn't rely on shrinking the prostate tissue. It's the replacement of several retractors or little anchors into the side of the prostate. It's sort of like a facelift for your prostate. And it opens up the urethra down the middle of the prostate by pulling the lobes of the prostate apart. This is really only suitable, though, for men with very small to medium prostate.
This is quite fascinating. And if someone's hearing this, because they might think, all right, well, this could give me a relief. They know they've got the condition. Yeah. Do you talk to your GP? Is this accessible? How does it work?
So I think it's important to speak to your GP, because they're worth their weight in gold, I have to say that. But then a referral to a urologist, and it has to be a urologist who has a specific interest in doing not just classic benign prostate surgery, but the more minimally invasive stuff.
Minimally invasive. Because the classic is where you cut the you're actually cutting it.
We refer to it as a rebore in inverted commas.
So minimally invasive prostate surgery. It is fascinating. And, of course, this is for the benign situation. The benign condition lead to cancer, or is it just there's always a separation?
No, there's not always a separation. And so that's why it's important to have an understanding and to see a urologist who's experienced with prostates, in that we want to be able to tease out preferably exclude the risk of prostate cancer. And we can do that a couple of ways. One is looking at the PSA, which is a blood test, and looking at the PSA kinetics, so how it's changing over time. But oftentimes, if we're concerned or there's a family history of prostate cancer, we'll send men for an MRI of their prostate. And if their MRI is clear, then we'll proceed with surgery to make sure to ameliorate their prostate symptoms.
I know there's a debate over diagnosing prostate cancer and PSA tests. If you say let's talk about over 50s, how often should the PSA test be taken? Do you talk to your GP? Do you do it yourself? What do you do?
I definitely think people should have a PSA test at least by the time they turn 50. And if it's very low, so less than one, they can probably have their PSA tested once every 2 years or maybe once every 5 years. If their PSA is higher than one, they probably need annual PSAs. And if there's a family history of prostate cancer or breast cancer in what we call a first-degree relative, so being your father, your brother, or your child, so 1 degree of separation, then you need slightly closer PSA monitoring.
All right. Dr. Patterson, very interesting. Thank you for talking to us tonight. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a good evening.
Dr. Imogen Patterson, she is a urologist surgeon at the Sydney Adventist Hospital. Sydney Adventist Hospital harnesses the latest advancements in health while giving you the attention, respect and care that you deserve. We speak with them every couple of weeks, and I'm in awe of surgeons who do that extraordinary work. And the way she was describing what she does, I found, it's humbling, really, because They're things that not many of us can do. 10 minutes to 10.
A diagnosis of cancer is devastating.